everyone, and welcome to the Music Biz Podcast, presented by Hypebot.com. I'm your host, Courtney Harding. Today on the show, I'm talking with Tim Quirk and Brian Calhoun, who are the co-founders of Freeform Development, an app development platform that lets musicians generate additional revenues by distributing their work, much like free-to-play mobile games. And Tim and Brian are also music and technology veterans who've held executive positions at a variety of companies. So we're going to talk to them about Freeform and also broadly about the state of the music tech sector. Just for our listeners, make sure you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. And you can also follow the show and get the latest episodes on SoundCloud. And if you like us, it would be great if you would rate us highly and leave us a nice iTunes review. Let's start talking about Freeform, since that's top of mind for you guys. What inspired the creation of the company, and sort of how did the concept come to be?
It came together based on a phone call that Brian and I had. I was working at Google Play at the time. I was head of global content programming there. So I was overseeing the global merchandising team for all the different digital content verticals in Play: apps and games, books and magazines, movies and TV shows, and music. And I'd been sitting in quarterly business reviews with all our digital content partners for a couple of years, and it had become obvious to me that the mobile game developers had figured something out that the rest of the entertainment industry was lagging behind. Mobile game developers were making money hand over fist, and they'd moved to this freemium model. And sort of the so I spent a couple of years trying to figure out what they knew that nobody else did. And what I boiled it down to was they figured out in this century, free doesn't mean promotion anymore. Free means distribution. They literally give their stuff away for free, accept that the majority of people aren't going to pay, and just focus only on the folks who are monetizable. And they've become hyper-efficient at it. So I had had this sort of brainstorm about a way to distribute music, taking a lot of the lessons of free-to-play mobile gaming distribution. And literally the morning after I thought it up, like I was on the road traveling, I was in a hotel room in New York, and Brian called me. Brian, I'll let you take the story from there.
So I've worked with a number of artists through a management company called Blueprint Group, which is part of Maverick, and help with the digital strategy and execution for our clients, including Lil Wayne and Nicki Minaj and T.I. and G-Eazy and some others. And I had been looking at trying to figure out how we could do something that was meaningful in the mobile space, and wanted to be able to take some lessons from mobile gaming, because I had, like Tim, looked at mobile gaming and saw that they were doing something right. It seemed like they were doing something well, and I just wanted to figure out how we could take some of those lessons and apply them to music. And like Tim said, I gave him a call, and the idea for Freeform had really kind of, that was the infancy of it, and we moved forward from there. Initially, it was like, hey, let's build this out for our client. But ultimately, Tim kept saying, you know, this is a real business. This is not something to do as a one-off. I believe this is a business.
This is pretty straightforward. There's two pieces to it. Our mantra is your album is an app. It's not instead of selling in iTunes and physically and putting it in Spotify and everything. It's in addition to. But when you make your album an app, it can be a much richer, deeper, more engaging experience. You can have credits again. You can have lyrics again. But you can also have stuff that you didn't have in the old days. You can have videos attached to it. You can have gameplay attached to it. You can have direct interactions with the artist. So that's part one, make your album an app. And then part two is don't charge for the app. Give the app away for free and monetize after the fact. It's really that simple.
In terms of what artists are going to be using this, do you think an artist has to be fairly high profile to use this, or is this something that any artist could do?
Well, the vision is for it to be an open platform that absolutely anybody can use. It doesn't matter if you have one fan or if you have 1 billion fans. Everybody likes free music. And if you say, hey, come get my latest music for free, fans install the app, they can play. It's up to the artist how they set it. We recommend, if you're distributing an album this way, set it to one complete play per day for free, and then the tracks lock. And if you want to hear more, you have to take some action to unlock them. That action could be just clicking a buy button, or you could do things that don't necessarily cost you any money as a fan, but do generate revenue for the artist, such as signing up for a free trial of Rhapsody, or applying for a Target credit card, or watching some game trailers. A general idea is it's up to the fan and the artist how they want to monetize the music, and the artist gets to determine what their price is and what they need in order to unlock it. So it works for anybody, but we launched our first 6 apps in June, and there are a variety of high-profile artists like Rob Thomas, lead singer Matchbox 20 has one for one of his solo albums, but also artists like Melissa Ferrick, alternative singer-songwriter. the Rebirth soul group in LA, and Wunderlich, a side project of my old band, Too Much Joy. And Stick from Dead Prez has one as well. So we've got platinum selling artists, we got gold selling artists, and we got developing artists that, you know, just their moms and their girlfriends have heard of them so far.
One of the things that I sort of think about when I think about what you guys are doing is, how does this work in the age of streaming music? So, you know, I have an app on my phone that has every single record on it. So what then incentivizes me to get an app that is just one artist's content?
Well, I'd say there's two answers for that. The first is, most people aren't like you. And, you know, I worked at Rhapsody for 10 years, so I'm a huge believer that, you know, music is moving away from being a product people buy and sell in discrete units and is turning into a service where you pay, hopefully pay, for access to the music. But I'm painfully aware, based on the 10 years I chipped away at that stone at Rhapsody, that those subscription services are not yet mainstream phenomenon. They will be one day, but we are deliberately reaching beyond the diehard music fans who are already subscribed. We're reaching out to casual fans. And that was one of my big learnings at Google Play. You know, because of the way our major label deals were structured, my merchandising team was highly incentivized to do lots of giveaways. So we were giving away, you know, we did a promotion where we gave away Kanye West's Yeezus. We gave away music from developing artists versus superstars and vice versa. We gave away catalog albums to see if it spurred new release sales and vice versa. And what I learned from doing all that is, there are hordes of people out there who have been left out of fandom. You know, they're interested enough in an artist to take a deal when it presents itself, but they never had any intention of paying $10 or even $5 for that artist's album. And if you can find a way to attract those casual fans who aren't subscribed to Rhapsody, they aren't subscribed to Spotify, they don't even use Apple Music, there's so many more of them. And that's what the gaming companies realized. You know, like Candy Crush Saga is making over $1 billion a year by giving their game away for free, and they're making that $1 billion by converting only 3% of the people who install that game into paying customers.
In terms of taking that experience and putting it in the music app, are the freeform apps sort of set up like you can consume things in very small bites? Because I think that's one of the things that's great about Candy Crush is, you know, if you have 10 minutes in line at the bank or you're on the subway for a couple stops, you can have a really quick experience that's pretty fun, versus other games that are longer, you know, or books or magazine articles, you can't just spend 3 subway stops interacting with it and feel like it's been a good experience.
That gets to the second answer to your question before this one, which is, you know, what's the value of these apps to somebody who has every album ever inside a music subscription service? And the answer to that is all the other stuff, the stuff that you don't get in the subscription service, the lyrics, the videos, the, you know, personal messages from the artist, the news, the interacting with other fans. So all of that is stuff that could be an immersive experience that takes you hours to consume it all, or stuff that you just pick at in little bites, you know. So if you're on your bus ride or your morning train ride and you just want to listen to a couple of songs or watch the new lyric video that the artist just posted, you can do that. But if you want to kick back on your couch and, you know, fall into the album that, you know, and listen to it in its entirety and perhaps explore a 3D virtual reality world that the artist has created for you while you're doing so, that will be possible as well. And the thing I love about music is, you know, it's important to clarify this. We're not trying to gamify music. We're not saying albums are exactly like mobile games. We're just saying there's a lot of high-level abstract lessons from mobile gaming distribution that can be applied to the music space. And one of the ways that music differs most emphatically from games, to my mind, is that even with a game like Candy Crush Saga that has many, many dozens of levels, it has an endpoint. You get to the last level of a game. There's no such thing as a last level of a song. That's one of my favorite things about music, is that it's one of the few art forms that's just as enjoyable the thousandth time you consume it as the first time.
The game that I sort of immediately thought of when I was researching what you guys were doing was the Kim Kardashian game. And I don't even know that it's really a game per se, but it's, you know, her sort of virtual world where you compete for different things. And there's also the in-app purchasing, and that made her a lot of money. Do you see artists sort of looking at that and then coming to you guys and saying, okay, can we do something that's like the Kardashian game where you can sort of play be in my virtual world for free, but if you want to buy a new dress for the premiere party, that's going to cost you this virtual currency?
I think that there's one of the things that's exciting about it is the way we've built the platform is that it's really limitless. It's up to the creativity of the artist and what they ultimately decide that they want to do. I think one thing that has happened with respect to gaming and being in the forefront of what people are thinking about in terms of artists thinking about what they can do is like the Kim Kardashian, there was so much press and so much hype about it, is that it opened people's eyes up to the possibility that there are some really cool things that you can do in mobile. So I think that's exciting. But, you know, as Tim mentioned, you know, we'll be able to do things where you can create a world that you can fall into for the artist around their music. So it can be virtual reality experiences, 360 videos, gameplay, all these kinds of things can be a part of it and give the fan like the full experience that the artist envisioned for their music that they've created.
When I heard about what you guys were doing, I realized that this is something I had been pitched on before, heard about before, and a couple of different people I know have tried to do this album as the app type of concept, and I haven't really seen any of them succeed in a huge way. So obviously a lot of people try things and try concepts before they actually take hold. So what are you guys doing different that you think this is going to be really successful that maybe other people didn't do in the past? Or is it an issue of timing or artist receptivity? Or what do you guys think you're going to do slightly differently?
I think one of the big things that people have done, and I've looked at the space very closely too, just from the perspective of working with artists. And I think one of the big mistakes that people have made is that they create these the expensive apps that are, and then ultimately try to charge for them. And we've seen from consumer behavior, and you've seen what the shift has been with respect to the way people are consuming apps and games, is that they want free things, and then you monetize by upselling them some additional content or access. I think that's really a fundamental difference that you'll see. And there have been some really interesting apps that are out there, but you're just not as likely to get people to go and spend $12 or $15 on an app where the music is, you know, the album is the app. But I think this way you'll see a much larger uptake in the ability to monetize, not just on the music, but also the other things that the artist has going on in their career. So it's merch, it's VIP packages, it's ticketing, it's fan clubs, it's all of those other things as well.
Yeah, and I'll just reiterate that you know, the people who've played in the space, they've made one of two sort of opposite errors. The first is they go completely customized, spend hundreds of thousands of dollars creating this one-of-a-kind experience, and then feel like, oh, the only way I can recoup all the costs I just put into this is to charge for the app, and then nobody buys the app, and then artist apps get a reputation as not working. The other end of the spectrum, you have companies that say, oh, we're just going to do this at scale. We'll do it affordably for artists, but everybody gets the same template. So every artist app looks and functions exactly the same. And neither of those two approaches work. You need something where, that's why Freeform is a platform. We're building a platform. We're giving artists a tool set. And it's one of the reasons we named the company Freeform. We want to be a blank canvas artists can paint their own visions on. And the general idea is, we've done all the development work, so we've saved the artists literally hundreds of thousands of dollars, but they should still be able to get enough customization that each one is expressing their unique vision.
Are there any cases when an album maybe shouldn't be an app? Like, are there certain artists where this wouldn't work? And, you know, just to sort of play a little bit of devil's advocate, or just to think, you know, are there folks that this isn't a good fit for?
There's a couple different ways to answer that. I'm going to start with, there's two different things these apps can do. On the one hand, if all they do is serve as hyper-efficient MP3 distribution mechanisms, so you get your music into more fans' hands because you're giving it to them for free. And the way the system is set up, like if you give somebody your album by letting them sign up for a Rhapsody trial, the magic of this approach is you're actually earning more money from that customer than if the digital wholesale price of selling them the album through iTunes in the first place. So A, as the artist, you get more fans, and B, you get more money from each and every fan. If the app is disposable in a way that's all it does, it just sends them the MP3s and then they never return to the app, that's okay because you've still gotten more fans and you've gotten more money from every fan. But the second problem we're trying to solve is engagement. Once you've gotten a fan to install an app, you now live in their pocket and you want to find a way to create an experience that's compelling enough that they return to it over and over again. So not everybody is going to be really good at the second piece. It requires sort of constant engagement with your art, with your audience, constant updating of the app with new content and news and stuff like that. Not everybody is necessarily going to want to do that work. So I would say those apps won't be as successful as the apps for artists who do that, but they'll still serve a purpose because they're finding a way to make artists money again. And that's something we should really emphasize here. You know, our model doesn't pay per stream. But if you take the gross revenue that an app generates and divide it by the total free plays you see in that app, you come up with a proxy, an effective per stream rate. So you can do an apples to apples comparison with the value that tells you what's the value of a free stream in a free form app versus the value of a free stream at Spotify or the value of a free stream at Pandora. And as you know, Spotify's free tier pays out, I believe, about a fifth of a penny a play. And Pandora in the States, I believe, is a third of a penny a play. The average across the first six freeform apps that we launched right now is 13 cents a play. So it's just orders of magnitude more money for artists. And it's pretty simple. You know, the music business has been outsourcing conversion of our free listeners into paid listeners, into paying customers to other companies. You know, in the old days, we relied on broadcast radio and MTV to do it for us. Now we're relying on Pandora and Spotify and YouTube to do it for us. What we're telling artists and labels is, hey, here's a set of tools so you can control your own free to paid conversion funnel. And when you do, you will be much more efficient at it than these other companies are. And you will see gobs more money as a result. And it's working.
I would also just like to just add, you know, who does it, you know, does it not work for certain people, or sort of what people does it work for? I think one of the things that we've seen as there's been this transition to digital from physical is, you know, when I'm talking to artists and I see the amount of effort and energy and creativity that they put into creating this physical package, I'm seeing them get frustrated by the fact that fewer and fewer people are actually seeing that because people are buying it through a digital service where they get a, you know, square picture and some audio files. But they spend a tremendous amount of time and energy, like I said, in creating this great packaging for their CDs. And, you know, so it's pictures and credits and lyrics and liner notes and all those things, but increasingly it's seen by fewer and fewer people. This is an opportunity for the artist to allow their creativity to be expressed in a digital way, sort of what the album should be, I believe, in 2015.
Well, yeah. It's also a way to present the artist really holistically, because right now it's still very fragmented. So if I listen to an artist on Spotify or Apple Music or Rhapsody or any, you know, pick a streaming service, you know, I get maybe their tour dates, maybe some pictures, maybe some information, but, you know, then I have to go to follow them on Twitter and go to Twitter to read their tweets. I have to follow them on Instagram and go to my Instagram app and look at their photos. And, you know, and then if they are more sort of creative person who's maybe into merchandising, I have to go to a Pinterest page or a website. And it's this very sort of broken experience, whereas if I'm in an app, I assume everything is all in that app. So I can, for example, watch a video and the artist is wearing, well, I'll use sort of a girly example, like the artist is wearing a dress that I really like. I can be in the app and say, I want that dress. Click, here's the link to Amazon. Here's how much it costs. Click again and the artist takes a cut of that revenue, something like that. So it makes the experience a little bit more holistic, right?
What's interesting is that even in that example, you just conflated two different aspects. There's the creative aspect of all this content that the artist has created, and then there's the business aspect of how you actually make a living doing all of this. And what we find when we're pitching this concept to artists, managers, and labels is that we emphasize different pieces of it depending on who we're talking to. The artists tend to respond to the creative piece, the, oh, wait, I can have lyrics again. My videos can all be in one place. All the different material that I create, not just before the album's released, but as I'm on tour promoting it, whether it's brief things that get put up on Vine and have a half-life of, you know, like 1 hour, or whether they're, you know, lyric videos or more carefully produced videos or remixes. There's a wealth of material that's related to the album that gets created after the album is initially released. And what we're giving artists is a locus to where they can basically curate the experience and say, okay, here's every single piece of content that's related to this album packaged in a way that I want to present it to the world. And that's a fundamental sort of founding principle with us, is we want artists choose if they want to use the platform. Once artists choose to use the platform, they choose what material they distribute through it. And then they choose what the offers are. They set their own prices. They say, this is how much I need for a single, for an album. And importantly, and this goes back to your other question about, are there artists this won't work for? At a high level, what happens is there's any piece of content in the app can be in one of three states. It can be free just by virtue of installing the app. It can be metered, so it's free initially until you hit some parameter, like one play a day, although the parameter can be whatever the artist sets. Or it can be locked from the beginning. We have artists releasing albums with bonus tracks where most of the tracks are free to play once per day, but the bonus tracks are locked from the beginning and you can only access them by unlocking the full album. It's all up to the artist. And so there can be a variety of different unlock actions. We're starting with just buy or redeem a partner offer. But over time, we'll be adding in share this app to Facebook and get a track. Complete level one of a game and get a track. Donate to my charity and get a track. Buy a t-shirt or a concert ticket and get a track. It's completely up to the artist what their unlock actions are. So there's going to be a set of artists who look at this as, oh, I'm just, instead of taking money from my fans, I'm taking money from brands and sponsors, and my music's not for sale. Like, I don't see Neil Young saying, okay, Budweiser can be a sponsor in my app, right? But having sponsors be one of, be the people who are paying for the audience that you're aggregating is only one way of unlocking material. So even for the most diehard, precious indie diva who doesn't want any brands popping up inside their app, this platform still works for them. They just have to figure out what unlock actions they want to make available to their fans.
Have you talked to artists that are not current artists, but maybe more catalog artists about using this? And the reason that triggered in my mind is I was thinking about Fugazi this morning, and obviously Fugazi's not going to have a branded app, but a band like Fugazi, where there's a lot of material there, but maybe it's not all accessible. It's in a warehouse in DC somewhere, like something like that. Or again, this is my own sort of dream, but like a Bikini Kill app where there's a whole like scans of all the Riot Girl zines or something like that, where it's maybe not an artist that is currently releasing music, but an artist that has a huge historical record and a vault of stuff that people would be really interested in accessing. Is that something that you guys have thought about doing?
Oh, absolutely. We're talking to catalog acts. We were talking to acts who have huge live followings. And if you're an artist who likes to vary the set from night to night and you've got years and years of concert archives, that stuff, it's just not practical to distribute that stuff physically. But it is practical digitally to say, hey, we're going to unlock our archives. Here's every concert we've ever done and make them accessible via the app. One of the ways that you might unlock content inside the app is just by joining the Artist Fan Club. And maybe you're paying $1 a month or $2 a month or $3 a month. And every month they're adding new content to the app. So you're always getting something fresh and new, is in quotes. It doesn't mean something they recorded yesterday. It could mean something that's just never been available before.
What is the one development in music tech that has surprised you most in recent years? Whether it's something that has been very successful, something that has completely failed, a trend that you've seen with artists, or a trend that you've seen with tech companies or labels, or just anything that you either thought would work really well that didn't, or thought wouldn't work at all that has actually completely taken off?
My answer to that one is I thought on-demand music subscription services would be have far more subscribers by now than they do. It's coming, it's just coming, it's happening more slowly than I anticipated back in 1999 when I joined listen.com.
Man, that's the one I was going to say.
Sorry.
I will say, sort of a version of that, something that is, that I have not seen yet, well, that I think is a little bit behind but relates to that, is the ability to connect, for artists to connect to their fans through these various platforms. As fans increasingly are engaging with their favorite artists through these various platforms, I had hoped that there would be better opportunities for artists to do things through these various platforms, messaging their fans, letting them know about tour dates, selling merchandise, and being more integrated into those ecosystems. So that's, we're starting to see some of those things, but I just thought that would be much further along as a part of these on-demand and non-interactive streaming services, quite frankly.
So why do you think that is? Because I actually just wrote something about Apple Connect and sort of why, Apple Connect right now isn't doing much at all, but, potentially it could be that, or, Facebook or Twitter. I mean, there are so many platforms for artists and fans to connect, but you're right, none of them have gotten really that traction. Why do you think that is?
Well, I'll take the Apple Connect one. That specific example to my mind, that was a rare example that I've seen of Apple creating a product not for the users, but for themselves. Apple Connect exists to help Apple, not to help music fans or musicians. And that's why it's not working as far as I'm concerned.
I think that, like, in terms of like the streaming services, a lot it's been they've had a lot of on their development roadmaps and a lot to do with respect to educating the music listeners on what their products are, and so I think that those types of abilities to connect are, I think, have been secondary, and I understand why they're secondary, but I just hope that they would be a little bit further along than they are. But it is exciting to see that they are starting to be able to, they are doing a better job of starting to work with artists in that way.
How has the relationship between music startups and artists changed over the last 15 years, I guess 16 years now since Napster? You know, back when Napster happened, that was a pretty huge divide. And now you've seen a lot of, you know, people working together, but there are, again, a lot of artists that are still really opposed to streaming. So how do you think the relationship has changed?
I mean, well, with respect to technology in general, I think that it's interesting. There are big egos at play, quite frankly, and there's also misunderstandings, which can make the working relationships difficult. I think sometimes you see the artist and the technology company saying, "Hey, we want to do something together," but then things fall apart because both parties overestimate their value to the other. I think that's one challenge. And the other is that there's not always an understanding on both parties' part to understand what the constraints and motivations and obligations of the others. Artists may not really understand what it takes to build and launch a technology company, what the engineering requirements are, what it takes to get down a product roadmap and actually build and execute on something, and not understanding it's like, oh, well, hey, I want this. Why can't it happen today or tomorrow? So that's on that side can make things a bit of a challenge. And then on the other side, the technology companies frequently don't understand the what rights the artist has, what constraints they have, what obligations they have, and also the nuances between the various parties who are working with the artist. The record label has a different motivation to do something than the artist does, than the tour promoter does, than the merch company does, than the publisher does. And frequently, when they're making a pitch to an artist or any one of those other parties that are involved in the artist world, they make the same pitch, and you can't make the same pitch to the music publisher that you can to the record label that you can to the artist. And it's a challenge when the parties do not understand each other or understand enough about the other's business to be able to present themselves in the best light and also give them the best opportunity to get a deal done.
Yeah, and at an even higher level than that, I would say there's just a lot of religion in the music business. There's stuff it's really Byzantine. Who controls what rights and why, and who you have to negotiate for them? They don't make a lot of logical sense. There's a lot of stuff that happens just because that's the way it's always been done, and nobody ever questions it. So it's funny, Brian and I were just recently in a room with a bunch of music technologists and sort of music business folks trying to, like, you know, bridge the gap and understand each other. And some of the music bizzers were complaining that these tech guys just didn't understand their business, and you know, they needed to better understand why things were done the way they were. And I tried to point out politely, hopefully, I don't know how polite I was about it, I said, you know, if you ever find yourself saying, well, that's just the way we've always done it, the reason the tech guys aren't understanding what you're talking about might not be because the tech guys are dumb. It might just be because the way you've always done it doesn't make a lot of sense. And the things that are done just because that's the way we've always done them are probably the first place to start at figuring out if there's a different way to do it. And I think one of the big divides between technologists and music biz folks is there's so much religion in the music business about how to do things, and tech companies are sort of inherently irreligious. They just do what works. If something doesn't work, they stop doing it, and they don't say, well, it worked yesterday, so it should work today. The music business is very beholden to the past.
What do you guys think are the next big technologies in the music, next big opportunities in the music tech sector, aside from your own project, of course?
Oh, I'm gonna let Brian take this because I know we have the same answer on this one again.
Well, obviously what we're doing, but I would say just the ability to connect better to fans through various methods. I mean, just it's exciting. And I sort of referenced it a little bit earlier with respect to working through the technology or the digital service providers, but increasingly being able to connect and work with for the artist to connect directly to the fan. And I know it's been done through email for quite some time, and there's other methods, you know, obviously using social channels like Facebook and Twitter, but even more so through other methods, including text messaging, which is, there's some opportunities for that to actually work. And of course, through mobile apps and push notifications, and also other types of messaging and communication.
Oh, we do have different answers then, because I was gonna say virtual reality. It's just a whole new set of creative tools and a whole new palette to paint with. Not just 360 videos, but the ability to create three-dimensional worlds that your fans can fall into and get lost in. It could be as simple as just this awesome immersive light show that works really well with dance music to, you know, if you're Bjork, you could be a wood sprite, you know, exploring some fantasy woodland or, you know. The possibilities are really astounding. And there's so much investment being poured into that. But I'm less interested in the business aspect than I am just the creative aspect of what you can do once you have these new tools to express your vision with. It can be as simple as on a mobile app, like inside a Freeform app, oh, there's a cool visualization. It's a nice eye candy to look at on your phone, you know, that changes with the music. And so every, you know, no two artists have the same visualization, even if they're using the same visualization engine, because it's responding to the music itself. But then you just drop it into a $2 Google Cardboard, and all of a sudden you're in this immersive 3D world. I love the ability of these new technologies to sort of adapt to whatever technology the individual user has. So you could be looking at one thing on your bus ride on the way home, and then when you get to your home and you plug in your Oculus Rift, it's the same piece of content you're looking at, but the experience is completely different.
Well, thank you guys so much for taking the time to chat with us. If people want to find you online, where can they do that?
Well, our website is freeformdev.com, or just go to Google Play or the iTunes App Store and search for apps by Freeform Development, Inc.
All right. And if people want to follow you guys on Twitter, on Instagram, any other social platforms, where should they go?
We're at freeformdev.
That's all for this episode of the Music Biz Podcast. Thank you to Hypebot for helping us put this show out. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, please send me an email at kyle.bylin@gmail.com. That's kyle.bylin@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's discussion.